Can you hear me? I'm having a bit of trouble with my signal for some reason this evening. I don't know why it keeps going in and out. You can. Then it may, I can save it before I do a reboot. But yeah, good evening. And I don't know if Cheryl said then, but actually, this evening is the last Monday for a while that I'll be doing. Because excitedly, now on the board, which I'm really excited about, the Board of Trustees. Hi Doreen, as is Doreen. and those meetings are on Monday evening, so I have to move the Tao Te Ching. Oh, and Cheryl just said she was saying thank you for, or just acknowledging that I've been here on Mondays and that I will be missed. That's very sweet. Thanks, Cheryl. Yeah, so it may well happen that I decide maybe there is some, I could just take a shorter slot, which whether I feel like that's a little bit much. Given the board meetings also on the Monday. I know there are a couple of other slots as well that I could fit into, but I'm actually travelling for work pretty extensively the next 3, 4 weeks, and then I'm actually away a lot in September, and I'm at the retreat in October, so it might be better just to and to you, Doreen. and she was just saying that there is a time slot on Wednesdays, so I could talk to Ken. Yeah, Ken did mention that, so I was just sort of seeing if maybe that might be a bit overload. But to sort of know that I've got 2 evenings a week that I'm committed to. So we'll see. We'll see. We'll see. I'm going away. I'm hoping everything will become a bit clearer. When I get back. But anyway, let's all that. We still have tonight. We got tonight. So moving on. Yeah, we are on the Tao, and it is our 17th week. And I know that because we're on chapter 17. Or maybe that means it's our 18th week. I don't know. I'm not very good at that. So here we are. And before we begin, just to kind of stop the mind with ramblings for a moment and just sort of leaving it outside, we're just going to close the eyes and take a breath and move into our beingness, our awareness of the breath. And sort of sensing into our heart, spirit of the heart, and the physical body. It could be as a and then from here, just making an offering of our time together this evening. May all beings be happy. May all beings have a life of joy and peace. Okay. All right, beautiful. I read Stephen Mitchell's translation of verse 17, like what we're talking about this evening. Aware that he exists. Next best is a leader who is loved. Next, one who is feared. The worst is one who is despised. Make them untrustworthy. The master doesn't talk, he acts. When his work is done, the people say, "Amazing, we did it all by ourselves." So, yes, it's verse 17. So, this week is this particular verse on a superficial level is talking to us about how that when we don't identify with a separate self when we're just able to Rest in self, with a capital S. There is no need to direct or manage. We simply just be. And from that space, what happens is we're in a leadership position or a teaching position or a parent or a friend or advisor or mentor. What happens when you come from that space is that, you know, you empower people. You empower people to make their own decisions. You aren't suggesting what they should or shouldn't do. And just by being there with them, they are able to come to a conclusion themselves and know that they came to that. So as it says, it's amazing. We did it all by ourselves. So I think it's kind of interesting, this particular verse, and we're going to look at it from like a deeper level in a moment, other than sort of enlightened leadership, as Wayne Dyer calls it, that we're talking about here. So I just wanted to run through it and then offer a different translation. When the master governs, the people are hardly aware that he exists. And it's completely invisible. And a sage, which is another word for a master, is completely fine with that. What a relief. There's no intention of having a legacy. I'm sure Buddha wasn't, didn't sort of imagine or desire that a couple of thousand years later people would still be talking about him. Next best is a leader who is loved. So if you're unable to be in that for itself, then at least be compassionate. You know, that would be the next best thing, being a compassionate leader. The next one who is feared, I think this would be one who governs through fear. And eventually people will stop fearing you or you stop being terrifying, and then they will go on their own way. So that would be the next best, because it's something. And the worst is the one who is despised. So one who is hated, who acts in a hateful way, who is cruel, would be the worst of all. And people are confused, and then they become full of hate. And then they don't know their own way at all. If you don't trust the people, you make them untrustworthy. If you don't trust the people, you make them untrustworthy. So I think this is also sort of interesting to think about. If you don't trust people, you make them untrustworthy. When it sort of stands to reason that when you know, if you don't trust people and you're constantly telling them what to do, you take them away from being able to make decisions for themselves. You begin to sort of undermine their self-confidence. And we talked about this, I don't know if you remember, in the yamas and niyamas, a steya is one of the yamas, and it means non-stealing. And one of the things about non-stealing isn't just like not taking people's objects from them, but it's not taking away their confidence or power. And one of the ways that we do this is when we worry about people. Because when we worry about people, ultimately we are not trusting their decisions. And in doing so, and I'm sure we've all experienced people who worry about us a lot, and how and how confusing that can be for us, because it makes us question our own intuition sometimes. And then so the best way to lead is to trust that people can come to their own decisions. Sunk in, actually, when I was, and then Bill kept coming to me. Am I here still? Sort of quit for a little bit. Hi, Cheryl. I'm not sure how long I was gone for. Hopefully not long. But I was... was going in and out. Can hear you only a few seconds. Can you hear me now? Is it more solid? Yes. Okay. Oh, it seems better now. Yeah, I don't know. There's something up with my internet connection that I started about 5 minutes before we before 7 o'clock. So we'll just see how it goes. It may be that tonight, the last night for a while, I might just have to offer some music. You close some of your tabs. How did you know? Close some apps. I'm sorry about this. Let's see if this helps at all. Okay. Okay, we've closed like five apps. We'll see if that helps. Okay. So I was saying that I really took a stayer to heart. I don't know if you heard that part, but a stayer is non-stealing. And it's essentially not just, it's like trusting people and allowing them to make decisions for themselves. So I was saying that I really took this to heart, and I remember about 3 years ago, Bill was having some challenges with a board he was a member of, and would come home often. I remember really sort of listening to this idea of not doing that, of just being a soundboard, really, and just sitting and trusting that the decisions Bill would make would be just perfect for him. It may have not been what I would have chosen, but no, it wouldn't have been perfect for me. Everyone is different. So, yeah, I just would listen more, and I found that actually much better for our relationship, and also better for me than being told I offered poor advice, which could well have happened. So the master doesn't talk, he acts. I love this. The master doesn't talk, he acts. So Stephen Mitchell points out that this is really how we should be living our lives as an example, rather than advising others how to live their lives. And I always think we do well to listen to this particular do as I say. So it's quite the opposite. And I remember whenever that occurred, or whenever my mum would say, "Don't do as I do, do as." Probably not going to take that advice. I'm probably going to, and a child says to when you're cursing, for example, and a child might say to you, "Well, you were cursing," and you say, "Well, don't do as I do as I say." And the Tao says it doesn't work like that. The best way you can be as a teacher or walking through life is really just through your actions. So focus on your actions, focus on yourself. And when his work is done, the people say, "Amazing, we did it all by ourselves." Which maybe we have a sense of in life that that when people hand us the opportunity to make choices for ourselves, we do believe we did it all by ourselves. Space for that decision to come through. So I wanted to just read again. Okay. And let me know if I'm going in and out again. It's still being a bit iffy. She says, "I love being invisible. There's no responsibility in it, no one to save and no one to teach." And I love this because this is me talking. I love this because so often we just there's like a reaction in this that we want to teach. I remember listening to some an audio of Muji the other day, and he was saying that lots of people come to satsang to see him and to listen to him, and then they leave and say, "Brilliant, I'm off to be a teacher." Well, you could just work on yourself for a little longer. And I remember when I was training to be a yoga teacher, there was definitely this sense that people just really really want to be teachers. And that's not a bad thing. I'm not saying we have teachers and we approve. Why do we want to be a teacher? What is it? Can we not just rest and work on ourselves for a while? Why do we have to be sort of having to be sharing to everyone else? Is it because we don't trust them to make their own choices? Is it because we think we know best? Is it because we need some sort of credit? We want to put ourselves above another, perhaps by being the teacher or the master in a relationship. It makes us feel good. So it's all worth sort of reviewing. And I mentioned this before, beautiful teacher said that he's passed now, but he said that he never wanted to be a teacher. He only wanted to be the best disciple he could ever be. And I thought that was so beautiful, and that really changed my whole perception of just, yeah, stop thinking about being a teacher. Just work on being like the best student ever. Do whatever it takes just to listen and be a student. So Byron Katie says, so I'm always the student, open and excited and new, did and we don't come with the mind or our own ideas. She says, I'm always filled with what is beautiful. I'm the bottomless container that always has room for more. If I had a responsibility, it would be to help you realize your own truth. You see, you say it comes from within you, and I am the witness. My finger points you back to you. You're all that's left of my existence for as long as you believe that you exist. She says a friend of hers had what people call a near-death experience and was about to enter heaven, and she said at the last moment she was called back and she had returned to the world to save us. She didn't save herself first and then come back for us, which is actually the proper order of things, says Byron Katie. The most attractive thing about the Buddha was that he saved one person, himself, and from that all else came. It's like the instructions on an airplane for when the pressure drops. First, pull down the mask and put it over your own face, then put it over your child's. I know what it is to enter heaven, says Byron Katie, and not look back. And I know the arrogance of thinking that people need to be saved. If I can walk into the light, so can you. You can't help us with your words. There it is over there, follow me. No, you do it first, then we'll follow. The savior thing is lethal. And she says, I don't even see myself as a spiritual teacher. Of course, you can use me by asking me a question, and I answer you, and you hear what you think I say, and you set yourself free, or you don't. So she just provides, just sits there in front of you and provides questions for you to answer for yourself. And she says, all I have to offer is the four questions and a turnaround. And she's talking about the work that she does. As people begin to answer the questions, they begin to disassemble everything about who they think they are, and until eventually there's nothing left. And people can take inquiry home with them. They have it for breakfast every day, and that leaves me as gone. It deletes me altogether. And so I am an equal possibility of peace, the student sitting with the student. And this is the healthiest scenario of all, the scenario that deletes the teacher altogether. Okay, and she says that the problem would be if I was teaching you, then I would be teaching you dependency and telling you that the answers are somewhere outside you. So I have nothing for you but questions. So again, on this point that as the Tao is talking about, that the teacher doesn't talk, she acts. There really is nothing to teach in the end. They're just pointers. And we know this from, you know, when we think of the greatest teachers we have, they're always the ones who aren't telling us what we should and shouldn't do. They're the ones just encouraging us to go back and ask within. Which is one of the beautiful things about awakening together, like the whole ethos is that you have the answers inside you. It's just a pointing, maybe, so that you can go back in and ask, a reminder. So one of the other Translations was very similar. It's just instead of the word master, they use the word teacher. So the highest teacher is not known by others. The next highest has followers who love and praise her. The next highest has followers who fear her. The lowest has followers who scorn her. If one does not trust, she will be considered untrustworthy. The highest teacher acts in a leisurely manner. She chooses her words carefully and does not waste them. When she accomplishes things, her followers think they accomplished it themselves. So it has a slightly different flavor when we switch the word master for teacher. And so Lala Towler comments on this particular verse about how, often we're guided by fear, that we think we're going to experience bad karma or not be enlightened. And things like that. So that would be, if our guidance is pushing us towards those, then we're not coming from the self. And he says, what we're really saying is just to let go. That's really all that this verse is saying, that just if we can accept what arises, and let go and have no desire to be anything or become anything, then actually we become, without desiring to become, more useful to those around us. We are able to serve them more because there is no attachment to that. We have fully accepted ourselves. We're not looking to become a great wise teacher. We're not looking for credit. We're not looking to improve the world. We are just simply being our true nature. So he says this really is just releasing, about releasing and being open. So there is another translation which is completely different, and I wanted to read that because I think it gets to the deeper level of what this verse is saying. The deepest virtue is to be unaware of a separate self at all. Being aware of a separate self, it is good to have compassion for that self. So what we're saying, and it's you'll hear sort of echoes of the original translation by Stephen Mitchell, is that best thing you can do, best thing you can try and be for yourself is reach a place where you're unaware of a separate self, where you just merge with the infinite, merge into self. If you cannot do that, and on your journey towards that point, you're still aware of a separate self, you're aware of this person and identity, and sometimes you identify with it, then at least the next best thing you could do is have compassion for that self. So really just learning to love the self. Because at least if you are kind with yourself and love yourself and try and accept yourself, then you're creating a space for someone else to feel unjudged as well. Not having compassion for ourselves, we become afraid of our own nature. So it is when we do not have this kindness towards ourselves, this self-love and acceptance of what is, that we become afraid, that the mind becomes confused and begins to feel fear. And then being afraid of our own nature, we then end up hating ourselves, which we can see, you can see that pathway happening. That when you become so identified with your person and you don't and you're fearful of that person, you don't trust what they like your own identity, you don't trust the decisions you make, or you're scared that things are going to happen, that starts to generate a real hatred of yourself. You don't want to be yourself, you don't want to be this person. So then there's sort of stuck in this mire of hating the person and not realizing that you aren't the person anyway, that you are the self. And this translation says, hating ourself, how can we be of value to anyone? And of course we know that to be true. I always think, the people sometimes I meet who frustrate me the most, I can see a kind way of saying it. I can see that really their actions that are often unkind and cruel just come from hating themselves. And so, you forgive them because how can they be of value when they feel such hatred for themselves? So, you've got to start unwinding that before they can sort of soften it, soften up and let go of the unkindness. Free from self-hate, our actions are not burdened by the need for attention. So we know this to be true when we don't hate ourselves. We don't need anything. Often when we don't like part of ourselves, that's when we start to think, well, I want some credit, I want someone to pat me on the back and I want some praise and I need to accomplish X in life and I want to become enlightened because I'll be a better person, or I'm not perfect the way I am, therefore I need to improve myself, and all those things mean that our actions become sort of swayed really by that sentiment. Therefore, people say it happened naturally. So when we are free from that, and we're not sort of after anything, as it were, then people can say this happened naturally. So this is William Martin's translation, and I like the way he sort of really just changes it up. He's not a stickler. He's not nervous at all about trying to honor like the original translation that is echoed by many. He's just his interpretation he runs with, and it can sort of open up a whole different way of looking at it. So he just then elaborates this on this. Are we really being helpful to the world when we are unconscious of our own pain and self-hate? We often become involved in helping others, making the world better. We can give the world no greater gift than our own unconditional self-acceptance. As that occurs, our actions become unconditional as well. Free of strings, these actions allow others to accept themselves. Accepting themselves, they act from their true natures and the world is healed. So I love this. So really, when we start to get down to it, as I said, this verse is all about reminding us to accept what is. And when we move into a place of acceptance, what we're really doing is emulating self with a capital S. We're just allowing everything to arise as is. And then from that place, we actually do provide more, a greater service to the world because we allow all others to be as they are. Excuse me, I was having a drink. I was kind of thinking about this idea of just accepting everything as it is. And what I realized this week was that when we talk about becoming nothing or being nothing or making yourself zero, what we're really saying is letting go of the desire to be anything and desiring instead to not be anything. So not thinking about being a good friend or being a good partner or being a teacher or being accomplished in our job, but actually just not being anything, like letting go of all identity. Oh, that would be like a deep desire, just to let go of the desire to be anything and instead just accepting what is, accepting what comes through. Share something that he says within that, called breaking the spell of personhood. There is nothing you need to accomplish in order to be what you are. What you are is already established effortlessly and timelessly. However, this is something that we need to recognize and confirm, as that is how we break the spell. Seem to be experiencing some sense of background agitation. Especially in Western culture, we're always running restlessly about, fueled by the feeling we always have to be in gear. Once you become aware of your I am-ness, you are at peace. When people speak to you, it is the I am-ness that energetically does the listening and spontaneously responds. You, as a person, don't have to do it. The person is a very busy character, while the I am-ness is never busy, even if it does many things. As presence, one comes to see that all acts in the body. And this is really echoes the Tao Te Ching lessons of becoming the non-doer, or being the non-doer. We will only come to understand what it means to be in the natural, neutral state once we are really ready to enter that state. If I were to say to you, don't do anything, you might instead try to do nothing, which would be ridiculous. So I don't advise you to do nothing. Rather, let your activities occur naturally and keep your attention in the I am. So I've been doing this practice for a while, not that long, but a while, and I have to say it's such a relief. Just allowing whatever arises to just arise and returning to the place of I am. I find, for me personally, much easier to remember. It's easier to remember just when I feel myself getting out of, or getting emotional, instead of trying to suppress that, and we've talked about this before, instead I can just sort of allow that to be and place my attention on the I am, the witnessing of that, like who is perceiving this. So, for example, I went to watch Dunkirk at the weekend. Don't know if you've seen it. It's a movie about the Battle of Dunkirk, and so you can imagine it's pretty harrowing. It's about soldiers at war, and it's a very intense movie. And I, because of this, I really think it'd be good if I could purge this, or maybe you feel this way because maybe in a past life you're in a war, or maybe you feel this way because you're nervous about what's happening next week. And all that came up, and I could have followed any one of those thoughts and gone with it. But instead, I remembered this teaching and chose instead just to witness it. And it pretty much went to the point where today I was thinking, should I revisit that? Should I go back and watch Dunkirk so that I can have that emotion be purged? Was I suppressing it somehow? But instead, I'm not driven to do that. It just sort of is helpful. What would have arisen was more emotion. Maybe I really would have cried, but that didn't arise. So all I did was witness what arose and then what arose next. If you make the mistake of believing that activities disturb the sense of presence, then you start avoiding them. But activities simply unfolding in the I am, which is the witness of them all. So being active will no longer disturb you. It's something very natural. You might ask, is it okay? Nothing will be enough until you are stabilized, and whatever arises will naturally correspond with your being. You will no longer be a person trying to do something. But as long as that personal sense remains in control, it will always be scratching about. It will be dissatisfied even with the I am presence. It will say, I don't get this I am-ness thing. I better go do something else. So it will start chanting Om Namah Shivaya until it falls asleep. It will walk up a holy mountain until it's exhausted, and then it will come down and bathe in the Ganges until every state. But as you pay attention, and you can begin today, you will become aware of that natural feeling, I am, and you don't have to go out looking for it. In fact, to go out looking for it would be a mistake, because then you are already being duped by the mind's tricks. You are the I am. How natural, how simple this truth is. So I love this for many reasons, one of the things Muji was saying in his satsang the other day was that not only do people come and they listen to satsang and then say, oh, I'm off to be a teacher, off to be a spiritual teacher, but they also come and then they're 10 months. And if that's through guidance, that's great. But sometimes it's just the mind trying to trick us away from just being in the I am. There's sort of a sense in that moment of that thought that, we don't recognize that the person we're looking for is right here. We're not the person, but what we are looking for is right here. The I am is right here. There is no place for it to go. And there is a satsang on this week when at the end, or at the end of asking the question, she said, "Please don't let me go home without knowing myself." And he said, "Well, that's crazy. Like, what do you mean home? Like, you are home. Do you mean your house? Because I could come and knock at your door. You give me your address, I'd go knock at your door, and you wouldn't be there. So that's not your home. Your home is always where you are. There's no need to sort of try or do. We can just be accepting of what is, return to this place. It's just so simple. Such a relief. You don't have to do anything. Don't have to do yoga and meditation and read and contemplate and meditate. We don't have to do any of that. However, something inside us might want to do that with a capital S, then actually the guidance might be to do that. So it's sort of discerning between what the mind thinks it should be doing and just allowing whatever happens to come through. So this is quite sort of poignant in my life at the moment. I have never been to India, and I was hoping to go to Ramana Ashram in February, but as it turned out, I had to have a surgery. And then a colleague of mine suggested, told me that there was a round table being hosted in Mumbai and the company would like me to chair it. So I got pretty excited about this because I thought, well, I get to go to India. And as it happened, the round table in Mumbai meant that I could go to Chennai for the weekend before, which would have been next weekend or 2 weekends' time. And then take a car to Ramana Ashram and stay there. And I contacted a hotel, and there was space, which was a miracle because it happens to be a full moon that weekend. And at Ramana Ashram, in the town, pilgrimage around Arunachala on full moons, where I think of like 1 million people go. So I was really excited about this and was telling people, what that I had an expectation of some deep spiritual experience. I was going to Ramana Ashram, and it wasn't entirely insincere. Like I, Muji's teacher's teacher is Ramana Maharshi, and Regina's teacher, one of her teachers, is Ramana Maharshi, and so it's important to me to. It was meaningful to me to be somewhere, where someone so beautiful had such an influence in the teachers that are in my life who've changed my life. And just have loved his teaching. So there was like a big heart. I felt need like desire to go, but some of it was certainly, there's no credibility unless you've been to India. And you know, if you're a yoga teacher, you hear this. If people come up to you as a student and you're a yoga teacher, and they say, "Well, obviously you've been to India," and you say, "Oh no, I haven't," you can see them sort of go, "Oh, then you can't be a very good teacher." So I had this idea that I would have more credibility if I went to India as well, and that was sort of playing out. So I sort of finagled meetings around the area of Chennai and around that time so I could be at Ramana Ashram. And that was the way it was going to be, It felt like it'd been set up for months now, moving towards this. And then suddenly, 3 weeks ago, not even, it was July the 4th weekend, so yeah, maybe that's 3 weeks ago, I went to a U2 concert, and to just cut a long story short, they did a big like video, and imagine these video screens. They'd run a drone through the Za'atari refugee camp in Jordan, and it was a very powerful visual to see the refugee camp from above America at some point, because it would give her so much freedom. And something in me, and it was not my mind, had this sense of like recognition, perhaps is all I can describe it as, like a like put a pin in it kind of thing. And then the next day I opened a magazine. I was staying at my future in-laws actually, and one of my friend's stepdad had Bloomberg Business Week, so I happened to open it, and the first story was about Western Union and how it's been helping refugees and sort of make payments and transfer money back and forth from Syria. And I thought, well, how that's interesting, because I don't know if you know this, but I'm a business journalist by, well, I mean, my job is a business journalist. And so I just felt like this was probably something I was going to write about. And again, it didn't come from me. It just was sort of there. So I called my boss and said, issue. And he was like, yes, absolutely. That's what you're going to do. It's great. Fantastic. Go do it. So, and then the normal stories go that, oh, and then everything followed really smoothly. And so it didn't. It's been quite hard to sort of pin people down, but not that hard for interviews in Jordan. But anyway, so it turns out that next week I'm going to Za'atari refugee camp and another refugee camp, Azraq refugee camp. But what I've had to do as a result is cancel my trip to India completely. There's just no way I can get around it. I can't do both on this particular trip. I just don't have time. Which is really interesting to me, because Ramana Ashram in on this trip, that I could have made the two happen, that it was really important for me to go there. But instead, I've just kind of sat back and just watched all the minds talk about this kind of thing and decided that, or not decided, and just allowed all that rambling to happen and just kind of gone with where I just feel like I've been moved to go. And I have no expectation, I have no idea if it's, why I would be moved there. Maybe it's just consciousness wanting to experience that through this person. I have no idea. And it matters nothing to me, just is what's happening. But it was just a really kind of interesting moment that something that was so planned. Sorry, just kind of got taken over by something else. The person thinks it's the doer, but isn't. And so if we can just be in a place of allowing whatever is to arise, then who knows where it will take us. Sometimes it's not where we think it's going to be. Anyway, it's like 8 minutes to. I think I'm just going to do this really short meditation. Let me see. We've been missing the obvious, but don't seek help from your mind to find it. Simply leave all these engagements outside. So just sort of finding a comfortable place. We're just making a mental note that we're leaving aside all intentions, even intentions of becoming awakened or having an experience or feeling our hearts, all of that, just leaving it all aside. Leaving aside all dates and appointments that we have. Leaving aside speculation and promises and aspirations. Leaving aside the past and not touching what's next. So, can we just be here and letting go of all the memories and all the things that have happened? And then letting go of what's coming next, whether we're going to have dinner or on our way home, just letting all that go. And then leaving even the concept of now. Just leaving everything aside for the moment. Don't touch anything. Leaving go of sensations. Leaving aside thoughts and feelings, memories, leaving aside in this moment. Discard all interest in these and remain empty. You are just here. Feel the sense, I am here. Now drop the here. Just leaving I am. Now drop the am. Just leaving I. Now drop. Not touching anything, not even the eye, what remains? What is there? Who are you? What size are you? Do you have a shape? Can this fade? Can you come to the edge of yourself or not? Does there exist anywhere you are not? Something remains that cannot be set apart. It is free of quality and immutable. This is the self of all. So I really love this meditation of just sort of letting go of absolutely everything and moving back into the self, or the sense of being. And even there, when we get there, there becomes like, oh, I'm having an experience of being the self. And then you have to go, oh, hang on a minute, who's having the experience? And then just observing the experience, and then maybe another experience seems to arise, or a state, or maybe it's a pleasant sensation, and then you just let that go. So I find this kind of guidance back to being in the self really easy and very quick to do in the day as well. So when ingrained in the identity or your personness, so the person poison, then you can just zip back into this and go, ah, oh, yeah, I remember now. From here, I can just observe. So everything arises, which is all really the Tao teaches. So yeah, it's a nice meditation. He does them much longer in some of his satsangs, more recent satsangs that are on YouTube, which we did play a couple of weeks ago. But it doesn't have to be quite so long once you do it a lot. So yeah, thanks for. I was going to play some music, but I've run out of time. So thank you for listening and being here. Been supportive. I'll have been here on Monday night. Thank you, Cheryl. And I do hope to find a different slot, as I say, when I get back from traveling. Something will arise, I'm sure, that will feel very natural. So it's a little bit early, Cheryl, but well, we've got 3 minutes, but instead of starting a song and stopping it after a minute, I guess I'm just going to hand over the mic to you. You might have some notices to share. And then to Doreen. So, yeah, thank you very much. And I hope you have a beautiful evening. Namaste.